Thank you. So I'm talking today about a local, really both a community education and mobilization project called For the Sake of All in the city of St. Louis. And excuse me, the picture that you're seeing was actually projected onto the community commons between our public radio and our public television station for a community action forum that we held, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a second. I won't relitigate what Dr. Hutchins already said in terms of this pyramid from Dr. Frieden, but the one thing that I would note is that Dr. Frieden notes in that AJPH article that that base is the most practically and politically fraught set of interventions that we have to do. And so in order for us to be the healthiest healthiest nation in a generation, we're going to have to mobilize not just communities, but also decision makers and policy makers around a set of political action, around a set of community-based action that's actually going to change some of these factors. And we know that just intervening on medical care and personal responsibility alone will be inadequate, especially to deal with some of the disparities that continue to drive some of our overall health outcomes. What are needed are policies at the community level that promote healthier homes, neighborhoods, contexts in which health happens, but also policies at the level of economic and social systems that reduce poverty, that reduce residential segregation, policies that promote the development of children and young people. So this is really kind of the frame for this project at the local level for the sake of all. This is our geography for this project. St. Louis, unfortunately, has been much in the news of late, and you'll see that Ferguson, Missouri is one of the 90 municipalities in St. Louis County that's represented on this map, which speaks to the fragmentation of St. Louis as a region. The city of St. Louis actually is not a part of St. Louis County. They are two politically distinct subdivisions. So we were looking at St. Louis City and St. Louis County in this. But beyond sort of the political geography, we were really looking at the geography of inequality as it impacts health. We had four major goals for the sake of all. The first was to inform the public about the social determinants of health as they affect African Americans as one of the most vulnerable populations in terms of health disparities. And that was important because most people, as Steve said, when they think about health, think about our stellar healthcare system or their own stellar self-rated health. But there are other factors that are impacting people's health outcomes, and those factors are driving health disparities. It was also important to us to not just present this as a moral story or a health story, but also to present the economic impact of these disparities and the economic impact of either intervening on these social determinants of health or failing to intervene on them. And it was important, as much as we do, and I agree with Paul, want to point out structural racism where it exists, we also need to show people that this involves everyone. So part of our goal was also to tell this story in such a way that no matter what your race or socioeconomic status was, you could see how these lingering disparities were impacting everyone in our region. And finally, to try and influence our policy around health disparities by broadening the conversation beyond personal responsibility and the provision of more and better medical care, both of which are necessary but not sufficient to deal with these lingering disparities. Our team consisted of seven African American scholars from both Washington University and St. Louis University in St. Louis, a diverse group of folks coming from our School of Social Work, the Department of Education, the College of Arts and Sciences, and the School of Medicine at Washington University, and in the College for Public Health and Social Justice at St. Louis University. Actually, one of my colleagues, Melody Goodman, is here today, who was on that team. And the funding for this project is from the Missouri Foundation for Health. For those of you who aren't familiar, the Missouri Foundation for Health covers most of the state of Missouri, except for a little carve-out around the city of Kansas City, and has health equity as one of its goals. We were also very conscious to work with a group of community partners that spanned more than just health care and public health. So we had a community partner group that included public health and healthcare, but also education, community and economic development, business and nonprofit, and crucially, we think media partners. We partnered with the St. Louis American, which is an award-winning, nationally recognized weekly African-American newspaper, and the St. Louis Beacon before it was merged with St. Louis Public Radio, which was actually an online independent journal focused on community issues in St. Louis. We also had institutional partners at Washington University in terms of our policy forum and Institute for Public Health at Washington University. And between August of 2013 and December 2013, we released policy briefs on a diverse set of issues. I was excited and actually proud that we released our first policy brief on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. But we focused on factors like education and poverty, residential segregation, mental health, chronic and infectious disease, and also the impact that health has on school completion, high school completion. And in each of these briefs, we highlighted interventions and initiatives that are ongoing at the local level and some national examples, and we consulted with local community stakeholders on the recommendations that were included in each one of these briefs. So these recommendations were evidence-based, but also informed by community input. And we continue this community engagement by inviting the community to respond to draft elements of our final report. So what you're seeing here are community members who were given the very high-tech tool of Post-it notes to tell us, what do you think about what you're seeing on this poster board? Is this information clear? Is it conveying the message that we're intending to convey? What do you think of this list of recommendations? Are these the right recommendations? Are these recommendations clear? And we actually culled all of these responses, came up with a set of several themes, and made changes to our final report based on the input that we got from the community. We modified certain of our recommendations based on their input. And we released our final report, which came out to be titled For the Sake of All, a Report on the Health and Well-Being of African Americans in St. Louis and Why It Matters for Everyone. Which was some input we got from our community partner group that we needed that additional line, why it matters for everyone. We released it at a community conference in May of this year at our History Museum in St. Louis in our beautiful Forest Park. Had almost 300 people, standing room only in an auditorium, a very diverse set of stakeholders, leaders from not just health, but education, business, nonprofit and philanthropic settings, and several policymakers from state and local level. And just to very quickly go through some of the elements of what we reported on. This is in the vein of Steve's maps from RWJF, but this is St. Louis, and this is we showed more life expectancies, but this is the one that people really honed in on. This is 63106, which is in North St. Louis City, predominantly African-American, very high rate of poverty, life expectancy at birth of 67 versus 63105, a very affluent suburb of St. Louis County called Clayton, not too far from where Washington University's main campus is, with a life expectancy of 85 years, so an 18-year gap in life expectancy. We also showed people some maps that show the segregation in St. Louis. This is percent African-American population, with orange being the highest, the light blue, moderate, the dark blue the lowest, and then poverty in St. Louis City and St. Louis County, same general color scheme, heart disease mortality, and cancer mortality. And we noted, as we know in public health, the very strong relationship between education and health outcomes. These are maps showing the percent of African American enrollment by school district in our region, and also the high school dropout rate by zip code in St. Louis City and St. Louis County. Again, where the orange is the highest. And as I said, it was important for us to also talk about economic impact. we were able to estimate the number of deaths in 2011 among African American adults that were attributable to poverty and low levels of education, and estimate that that has an associated cost of $3.3 billion. We noted that if just half of the 2,000 African American 9th through 12th graders who dropped out of high school had actually graduated, they would have made $11 million more in income, spent $21 million more on homes, increased our gross regional product by $15 million, and increased state and local tax revenue by $1.1 million. We also made sure to put some local flavor into our examples. So we told folks that we spend $1.1 billion on just three conditions, cancer, diabetes, and heart disease in St. Louis every year, which would be like building three Edward Jones domes where the St. Louis Rams play every year. And noted that cutting the disparity between African Americans and whites would save $65 million. And even though African Americans make up roughly 30% of the population of St. Louis City and St. Louis County combined, 42% of mental health care in hospitals is for African Americans. And cutting that disparity would save $27 million. We had a set of recommendations, again, that were informed by both evidence and by community input, and they map on very closely to Dr. Frieden's pyramid, but they also reflect what the community was telling us were the priorities. They include investing in quality early childhood development for all children, helping low to moderate income families create economic opportunities, investing in coordinated school health programs along the same model that the CDC has for coordinated school health, but also school-based health care, investing in mental health awareness, screening, treatment, and surveillance, investing in quality neighborhoods for all in St. Louis, and coordinating and expanding our efforts around chronic and infectious disease prevention and management. Even before we released our final report, we were briefing policymakers at both the local and the state level, including the mayor of the city of St. Louis and his cabinet, the Board of Aldermen, which is our kind of city council in the city of St. Louis, members of the governor's staff in Jefferson City, our capital, and the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus. And we are continuing this engagement in now our second phase of this work, really trying to identify those areas where our recommendations line up with existing agendas. So this is just one example of how the recommendations from For the Sake of All are aligning with the City of St. Louis's sustainability plan. And we put this in front of the mayor as an example of an alignment and letting the mayor know that the areas of recommendation that we are advocating actually line up very closely with things that the City of St. Louis already wants to do. And in addition to policymaker engagement and also corporate and civic leadership engagement in the City of St. Louis, community engagement is a big part of the second phase of For the Sake of All. We are partnering with a group called Focus St. Louis, which is a civic leadership development organization. And this is that community action forum that I was telling you about. We had about 120 people come out on a Thursday night to hear about our first set of discussion guide and action toolkits that we released last month. The first one was on the recommendation around creating economic opportunity for low to moderate income households. And the discussion guide really tries to distill the information that's in the final report, but also update some of the data. So those deaths that we estimated were attributable to poverty and low levels of education, we actually updated those numbers with more recent data, but also included the total population and those estimates for whites. We also have an action toolkit, and we'll have an action toolkit for each one of the six areas of recommendation that really go from low intensity to high intensity activities that individual community members and civic and social organizations can take around each of these recommendations. Everything from share this information within your networks of influence to volunteer and donate for these particular organizations that are working in these areas to advocate at the state and local level for particular policies that are relevant to these areas of recommendation. I also want to note that each of these discussion guides and action toolkits will also have a youth version targeted at high school age youth. I will say that the response to this project has been beyond anything we could have anticipated at the beginning of this project. Over 26,000 views of our website for the sake of all .org by over 9,300 visitors in the U.S. and this continues to blow my mind, 80 other countries. This project is particularly popular in Brazil for reasons that I don't understand, but that's exciting. Over 60 stories are mentioned in local, national, and international media. 80-plus community meetings and presentations. We've had a Twitter account for a little over a month, 168 followers already on that. We're being told anecdotally that this information is being used in grant proposals. We've met with the local community college. Our report's being used in literacy classes with adults who have an interest in healthcare careers. I was Skyped into a class for high school students in Chicago who had been assigned the report as sort of a college prep summer program. And we obviously could not have anticipated the events of August 9th and the ensuing events after the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, but our work is being used to provide context for the issues in Ferguson and also discussed as a blueprint for moving forward to heal some of the racial division and lingering disparities that we see in our region, which is not unique to St. Louis, actually has national implications. There are many, many people to acknowledge in this project, including my colleagues on the author team, excellent staff, the members of our community partner group, our institutional partners, and our funder at the Missouri Foundation for Health. Everything for the sake of all can be found at forthesakeofall.org, including all of our policy briefs. The final report is available for download. The media stories on For the Sake of All. You can follow us at the sake of all on Twitter, and our email address is there. Thank you.
So thank you very much. I think we had some really nice presentations here, and I want to now kind of open this up to some discussions. And I want to frame the discussion a little bit about, you know, from Jason, actually, I think what we heard is something very encouraging, that we really can make movement. And I think also from both, I think from actually all three of them, we heard about structural issues that we need to do, partnership issues, and especially partnership with social science. Paul was pointing out health and all policies. And we also heard a lot of, I think, about alignment and how all the different sectors need to align. And I think they would say across and up and down as well through the different political dimensions that we have. And I thought that we had an interesting perspective Paul brought to us was about the good and fair and that. And I think that fits very nicely with a lot of the stuff that we would think about here within equity as part of what APHA is very focused on. And then I thought Steve was and others were pointing out a little bit that we have a challenge here if we're going to pick a metric, one that is a broad one that would encompass some of the social determinants and which would also reach to this good and fair versus something that is more biological, really like life expectancy. And so, you know, that's a tension that I think that we have in trying to target and aim ourselves. So if people had comments that, you know, that you thought that you could relate to that, as well as in helping APHA kind of really focus in on how will we know how we have helped either build a movement, align our organizational capacities, and strengthen the public health system and the practice of public health in order to for the United States to become the healthiest nation in a generation. So, comments?
First, I want to thank the speakers because that was incredible. I really enjoyed the presentation. And I want to respond to Dr. Wolf's first question. The IOM group took a much more conservative kind of goal. And I guess my feeling is that if you're going to go for it, if we take a small conservative goal and we go to our communities or we go to our state legislators or we go to our federal legislators, they're going to give us even less money to even try and reach that moderate goal. So I guess I support the big, hairy, audacious as this is what we want to see. So why not put that forward and then give it our best shot? You know, no one can fault us for not trying. I love the community effort, seriously. And it really, to me, seemed very much like addressing kind of goodness and fairness, really looking at community, really engaging people across sectors and coming together to work together. So for me, Dr. Benjamin said it in the earlier session, that we really need to work from the ground up. But it's not one piece at a time. It's not things happening here and then here and then here. It's got to be things are happening here while at the same time they're happening at the federal level to try and prepare the soil for what it is we want to grow. So that's an option.
Yes.
A terrific presentation, really thoughtful. I'm struck that one of the challenges that we face in getting from here to there is the empty space between the inputs, such as you were talking about in particular, policy and environmental strategies related to segregation, education, housing, the like, and in the goodness and fairness goal, the indicators of goodness and fairness related to particularly differential outcomes and disparities. In the space that we watched WHO Health Equity Group try to fill in, as they were, the commission was working, particularly Oriol Solar's work from Jeanette Vega's work from Chile, was the space where they named the mechanisms by which health disparities are produced. And I thought that's underappreciated here. It's sort of the space between this and what they name were differential exposures, differential vulnerabilities, and differential consequences. And I'm not sure we build that intermediate outcomes as clearly as we might. And they might help us see whether the combinations of education, housing, segregation, access, policies could move these intermediate outcomes on the way toward these fairness indicators that we hope for. If we wait for the latter, I'm just concerned we'll never discover the combinations of things that move those intermediate outcomes that might ultimately be predicted.
So that's an interesting comment. I think you're suggesting really a strategy there, right? And not we might agree or disagree kind of really what the final outcomes are within a generation. So in a generation, in our interpretation, is by 2030, right? So we have 15 years to get there. But what you're talking about is really some of the focal areas, I think, as we move forward in trying to accomplish that. Yes.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm really looking forward.
Can you stand up, maybe?
I'm really looking forward to going and digging more into the things that you've presented. This may be a reflection of my own kind of ignorance, but I feel like in the first presentation we were being compared to other high-income countries, but not countries that have the same political perspective that we do, economic system that we do around capitalism, that we're like this uber capitalist country, and I always feel like it hinders us in terms of our ability to deal effectively with the social determinants of health when what really drives us as a country is making money. And I know that there are ways in which we can look at how if we reduce our disparities and we can save money, but just in terms of our framework, our approach being so capitalist in nature, if perhaps you could speak to that, whether that really is an issue or isn't an issue. I mean, maybe it doesn't matter whatsoever, but...
let me sort of push back and embrace your point at the same time. I think the pushback is that although some of the countries we were comparing to are Scandinavian countries with a liberal
social democracy,
thank you, model, other countries that we were comparing to included Canada, Japan, the UK, and so forth. Germany. And what was striking was that despite very different political structures and models of governance, we were still seeing this health disadvantage. That said, I take your point that even compared to those countries, we are over there on the extreme in terms of our focus on the capitalism model. But that's actually, I think, an opportunity. So there have been sessions already that I've attended here at APHA this part of the current conversation that's going on about the role of the private sector in helping us move forward with a lot of these initiatives. So in Jason's presentation and others, you're hearing how outreach to the business community, to employers and so forth, helps us identify this alignment of incentives where there's a win-win, where improved population health means, for example, if you're an employer, a healthier workforce, lower healthcare costs, and better education means that they're not only a healthier community, but workers that are prepared to compete in our knowledge economy and so forth. So there's a conversation around population health that we can have in the capitalist frame that will get us to addressing these determinants of health. But I think you're right that it needs to be contextualized that way in this country because of the environment we're working in.
I actually think we've got more of a challenge culturally than we do economically. And it's part of the reason why one of our goals was moving the conversation beyond personal responsibility. This notion of individual responsibility is kind of baked into the cultural DNA of the United States, and having messages that, as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has talked about in its work around talking about the social determinants of health, you don't discount the personal responsibility. You can embrace the personal responsibility, but have a both and conversation about the need for personal responsibility has to be supported by a set of systems that allow people to live their most healthy lives.
Can I ask a question, Steve and Tom, about, have we looked at this notion of social capital and that relationship to health? Because the individualistic capitalist model is, you're on your own, sort of Darwinian, versus that social responsibility, social cohesion, I'm responsible for you as well as myself. Is there any way to look at that?
We have not looked at it. I think there probably is a way to look at it in terms of the depression problem. I know the research may have been
may or may not pay off.
Well, there is a literature that on the linkages between social capital and health outcomes. It's not as rich as we'd like it to be, but it's certainly there. In our cross-national study, we were interested in looking at that, but there was a shortage of data where you could compare social capital across countries because it's measured in different ways. But in our current study that I mentioned, the health of the states, where we're looking at how health status varies across the states, we are digging into data sources to try to get at least approximates of social capital, because I think it's clearly a critical event.
Well, to answer your question, if I could only choose one indicator, would be days of life lost. In terms of the strategy, I wanted to suggest using Congressman Kai's 10-20-30 strategy, where you take 10% of financing or federal policy and you put it to the populations that have 20% of people existing below the poverty line for the last 30 years. There's 474 counties in the nation, and I think we could use a similar strategy or policy at the state and municipal level. And finally, I work mainly with the Latino communities, and same depressing story, but usually, Latinos live longer, and yet they come here and they get unhealthier. Why? Because people love me, it's toxic, we're terrible. This is what we show, we're terrible. Shame on us. But you don't tell people, like you said, we feel like we're healthy. That's an asset. I'm obese, yet, I feel like I'm healthy, right? So I will go back and tell them, green Latino is toxico, but then I'll go back to the protective factors. What is it about being Latino that makes us strong, the family, what is it about that? What can we go back and teach you? My beans are really good, they're healthy.
Other comments?
One of the things I want to comment, you set the conversation up against kind of like the strategy intersection of data with policy. And I like to say policy is actually a third thing into it. A whole new realm of communications. I think Jason pointed out really well something. We've got a whole new science coming up from communications and stakeholder building that's almost as powerful, maybe more powerful than the data that we can bring to it. And so as we develop policies and strategies, it's not policy and data, it's policies and data, and a whole new strategy of communications and stakeholder building is evolving really rapidly. It's the intersection of those three things rather than the two things we traditionally think about putting data to policy available.
Well, I think you're making a really good point, because up here, right, on our strategic plan, is we have building a public health movement, and a lot of that is really around how we'll communicate and with that intersection there.
And I think Jason's thing is loaded with simple infographics, you know, and those are quite often very cross-cultural, they're very communicative, but we have to somehow take the data that, you know, like I said earlier, we've got these, you know, 5 gigabytes of data, and we have to put them in 140 characters. And that's a whole new technology we have to bring in these strategies. And in order to get move these things forward, we've got to figure out how to do that because I'm doing that thing.
I totally agree. Let me also point out one thing. So there are just a lot of different indicators out there, and there are lots of people out there coming up with different metrics and different ways of looking at this. And, you know, I've heard about happiness indexes and other things like that, right? So there are other ways to look at that. And some of those could even kind of be embraced scientifically. You know, they're using scientific methods with which to come up with some of these. And so I keep looking around, and we hear these kind of conversations very targeted to kind of what we do know about. So I'm wondering a little bit from others if there are other, I don't want to stray too far, let me put it that way, but if there are other dimensions that need to be thought about. Let me go here, there. Go ahead.
I wasn't here right at the very beginning, so I'm not sure, but I know, you know, I do a lot of interventions, but I have a health economist and a lot of my studies who classify it. And they have this way of turning everything into follies.
Yes.
You can turn depression into follies, you can turn cancer into follies, you can turn stress into follies. I mean, I don't know if that's one common metric. I mean, there are ways to take all these different health topics and make them one thing.
Yes.
I think with mental health, we tend to focus on, and I work in mental health, we focus on psychopathology, and we overlook the effects of stress and trauma. I mean, in New Orleans, we have high rates of kids being prescribed ADHD medications, but then, like so many more kids, they think things that kids shouldn't be seen, like they've seen dead bodies, they have family members murdered or just drive-by shootings. And there needs to be, even among social workers, we focus on, like, individual pathology, and we're not looking at how stress affects their health, and that affects causes them to act out of school, they get prescribed meds, they get suspended, it affects their HPA access, which affects their memory, right, and affects everything. But we don't look at the basic stress.
Mm-hmm.
We have more conversation about that.
Well, again, I'd like to thank the speakers for wonderful presentations. And, you know, I'm happy to see better data and better communication of data about for policymakers, but I'm one of the rare Texas Democrats that votes. You got to have a fertile field to plant something to have it grow. And I have policymakers who don't care about data. And so that was a lot of my political speech. But I also have a question, which is community participation in the electoral process. I mean, I used to work in community health centers in Houston as a family doctor. And whenever people would complain about the wait time, I would hand them voter registration cards. And many people were actually quite grateful about it. But I also wonder if in our work to try to improve health outcomes, do we have a mechanism, an ethic, a role? You know, what's our job in improving voter participation to vote for people who will listen to our data so that adequate policy can get made? Because we can give good data to take to the bad policymakers all day and they don't care. And trust me, I have done it in the technology. So, you know, we can do this here and we must continue to work here. But also, how do we as public health authorities, with authority about information, get the people whom we want to help to vote for people who will allow us to have a system that maybe will allow some equity?
Yeah, so I hear my perspective in hearing that is about building the movement, right?
So the way we think about it, and I stole this term from someone else I wish I could attribute to them, is both grassroots and grass tops at the same time. And that's the logic behind our partnership with Focus St. Louis, is to till that fertile field and have these conversations among community members bubbling up from the bottom up at the same time that we're trying to engage business leaders and policymakers in these discussions. And I want to go back to Tom's point about the notion of really sophisticated communication. That's not trivial. So we work with a professional graphic design firm on this, on all the materials that we've done. And I tell my staff all the time, you can't underestimate the pretty. If that didn't look good, if it didn't look engaging, it wouldn't have the same credibility, it wouldn't have the same impact. So that's crucial. And actually, Steve and I are co-authoring a paper that should be forthcoming in the Annual Review of Public Health that talks about not just translational research, but research translation. How do we translate what we know for decision makers in ways that they can actually digest it and act on it? And part of it is community engagement, part of it's communication, part of it's presenting the data in a compelling way, and part of it's understanding how those decision makers make their decisions, and everything from the schedule on which they make those decisions to the context. So I agree with you. It has to be grassroots, grass tops.
Yeah.
I like to just add, thank you for everyone's comments, that in addition to having, I can't see this mark but the communication strategy is important, but what I like to say is an engagement strategy where you're engaging with both the community, you're engaging the health policymakers, you're engaging the policymakers. An engagement strategy is what we need to focus on. And I don't know if that's included as part of like, the vision of IT change.
I don't know if it's quite explicit. Susan, go ahead.
I'm going to go out on a ledge here, and I have one of my I'm Susan Polis, with KJ, and I absolutely agree with you that it's very much about making sure that policymakers hear from their constituents in any way, shape, or form. So I challenge each one of you who are here to get our legislative update and get our legislative alerts to start responding to those. We have lots of great information, but they say they don't hear from us. They say that they don't care because their voters don't hear from people who vote for them. So we need to let people know that there is a public health movement that is made up of people who vote in their community and can help make a difference in terms of whether or not they come back to their jobs. So we are always willing to try and help. Our communication strategies are constantly changing. We try to stay on top of things using every tool that's available to us. But then I challenge you as members and as section members and as people who are interested in public health to take this information out and help us get back up to the people who are making some of those decisions. We focus mostly on the federal level, but the affiliates focus on these activities at the state level. There's lots of opportunities to have our voices heard. We just need to take those steps.
So my concern is not just that we focus on business and fairness, but I think the country's become very mean. And there needs to be a way for us to include kindness. Because if I don't care about you, or if you're not part of what I do is us, then it isn't going to affect the disparities are going to continue to go like this. And I think a lot of voting is mean-spirited. And I think that would be good and it would be fair. But if we don't, and whether it's the faith traditions or whatever it makes people kind. And I mean, and being kind, whether it's empathetic, but we lost our humanity in terms of trying to get people to do things together. And so that's my concern because data doesn't measure kindness. And you can be happy and be very mean-spirited. That, obviously. I think we need to think about that too, because to mobilize everyone, we need to be kind to people who aren't us.
What we found in the legislature, when I was a commissioner of health, is that you have to figure out what motivates people you're talking to. And what we found out when we would go in and talk about health, I was kind of cute. I was in the care of it. In fact, I had one legislative chair.